Welcome to Soch Vichar. After a long lag, I've decided to take this up again. And I think it is the brief pause was necessary because it's good to have some people absorb the material put out in Soch Vichar and try and react to it and think about it. So, yeah, I needed the break too. So I did that. But today I was inspired to take up Soch Vichar again. Because my friend Javed Hassan, who I think most of you will know, prominent personality in Lahore, sorry, Islamabad, I should say. He doesn't live in Pakistan. He lives slightly outside Pakistan because Islamabad is outside Pakistan. But it doesn't matter. That's my private joke. So Javed is a well-known intellectual, writer, writes very well. He's been in financial markets. He's been educated in good schools like London Business School. Now he's the chairman of NAVTEC. And Javed makes some very precise arguments on social media. I've always been impressed by his precision and his honing in on the right subject, the right topic. Javed has been pushing me for a while to talk about the role of government. And I must say, I'm inspired by this topic. It's a very important topic. I also used to write about it and talk about it a lot in Pakistan about 30, 40 years ago, shows you my age. So let's take up Javed's topic. Javed, what do you mean by the role of the government? There is no role of the government in economics, or is there?
Can I be controversial, right, to start off with?
The more the better.
About your book, Looking Back. Mm-hmm. My critique of that book, mm-hmm. Otherwise it's brilliant, there's lots of interesting insight. My critique of that book is that you have put too much of an emphasis on the role of the government.
Good.
My fundamental view is that the government should be as little as possible. In fact, it's the people, the corporates, the nation that should speak for itself. And the government should be almost non-existent if it were possible.
So basically what you're doing is you're taking a very Lockean, Friedmanite view, right? Friedman and Locke had the same view. John Stuart Mill, for example, his essay on liberty. So do you draw your sort of inspiration from there, or just make your case for
it? I think if you look at 19th, 17th, 18th century Enlightenment movement, which was against the power and domination of the church and the royalty in Europe, that was much of the driving force. Then if you see the development of the U.S. Constitution, and then if you come into modern times, really Frederick Hayek, if you want to have a guru for me, probably Frederick Hayek is my guru. Mm-hmm. And in that, the state in all of these movements and has been the fight has been against the individual, against the state. Mm-hmm. How the individual can take power back from the state. In fact, the role of the Constitution, the U.S. Constitution, has been largely how to minimize the number of laws that can interfere in an individual's life. Mm-hmm. And how to minimize the role of the government. Whereas here we have a problem, and it is really quite, you know, these, what you might consider philosophical arguments, they are very important. Mm-hmm. Because if we fundamentally believe that it's the government that should take care of all our problems, We fundamentally look at the government to solve all our problems. Mm-hmm. And then the worst thing that happens, then we give the government all the powers to affect our lives. Mm-hmm. So if we start off with the very fact that the government should be as minimal as possible and as little interfering in our lives as possible, then we'll minimize the power that we give to the government.
So basically, you are saying, this is you're absolutely right, Hayek and Keynes, the two figures that dominated the 20th century, for example. Hayek was very much, as you say, for minimal government, but Keynes was not. So the Keynesian tradition, which kind of caught on till Margaret Thatcher and Reagan came in, the Keynesian tradition was to build more and more government, right? And the Keynes, and after the Great Depression, people like Keynes and others came along and asked for more and more regulation. Then came along people who said, hey, not only regulation, We have to build social safety nets. We have to put the government in the business of providing insurance, health insurance, as well as education insurance, as well as, you know, food insurance. Now, where do you stand on all these?
My fundamental view is that we start off with the view that the government should be as minimally involved in our individual lives as possible. Now, there is a certain indigent part of the population which might need some support. And the government role there should be to facilitate that part of society which is so badly off that cannot lift itself from the situation because it just there's a vicious cycle they've fallen into which needs to be broken.
So
other than that, let's say it is certainly my view is certainly not the Scandinavian cradle to grave government interference in terms of how you live and how you grow up. My view is that by and large, individuals given a certain degree of freedom and given a certain degree of level playing field, and that's where the government should come in, providing as much of a level playing field in society as is possible.
Okay, let's think about it.
It will never be It will never be perfectly level playing field. Now, you mentioned Keynes, and it is very important that people realize Keynes talked about intervention, about stimulus. It was in a particular set of circumstances of prolonged recession or depression where the so-called animal spirits were not operating in the normal way and private investors and bodies were not working in the fashion they normally would. So it was an exceptional circumstance, except that people have taken that exceptional condition to be a normal condition. And that's very dangerous. And that's why people, I don't think, even understand what Keynes was all about.
I think this is a very important subject, Javed, and I think we should talk about it a lot. In fact, my view, I've mentioned often in the Civil Service Academy, is that this should be the first lecture in the Civil Service Academy. People should understand what the role of the government is. But let's step back a little. What would you say, drawing on the 19th century classic philosophers or whatever you like, what do you think is the minimum role of government? Let's begin from the minimum role of government. Let's begin from there. Let's make it positive. What is the minimum role of government that we have, that we should have in an ideal society? Whatever society you think, then we'll bring it down to the ground.
Nadeem, minimum, I'm trying to be positive, but the minimum role of the government is the one that started off, is that it provides security to the people. It is a big gangster who can protect you. For that, it extracts a rental.
Okay. That is where it begins.
That's where it begins. Mm-hmm. It's a very powerful body or a king or an individual or a group of people who ensure for a larger number of people a certain degree of security in terms of life and their property. And for that, this group or this individual charges a rental.
Okay. So then you're going back to the old Lockean proposition, which is adopted in the American Constitution. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, or life, liberty, and property. So security is defined in these three terms, that life, liberty, and so that nobody can enslave you, nobody can take your life away, and three, nobody can take your property away, right? So these three, so the government is the big policeman, the big guardian who stands there and protects you. Correct?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
If that's the case, then you're saying, hey, the government should not come in and check the quality of the food or check the quality of the drugs. Is that something that the government should do, or the government should not be allowed to set standards in the market?
No, given, we really have to accept we are a much more complex society, say, from the 19th century. There are things, really, let's put it very simply. those areas which individuals or even large corporates can't do in a manner which is completely independent, that is somewhere where the government has to intervene. So, for instance, drug regulation or ensuring that the right quality of drugs is good. By and large, you and I can't do that, maybe. We simply can't do that. And even if we found out a certain drug was not of a certain good quality and blogged about it, that will not serve a purpose. Most corporates would have vested interests in promoting their own drugs. So you need an independent body there. And the, probably the best body in this case, if even if this could be outsourced, so be it. But in that it can't, the best regulator in this case is the government. So there's a definite role of the government in ensuring certain degree of quality standards within society.
So now what you've done is in the classical definition where that was life, liberty, and property. Now you put in regulation. Fair enough. I don't dispute that, and I think it's wise. But let's move on a little bit from there. In the good old days of Locke, etc., they didn't have to worry about things like infrastructure. Is the government supposed to provide infrastructure, or can there be private market determined means for providing infrastructure?
There is an assumption in Pakistan that it is the government that has to provide infrastructure. There's a sort of global view now which is pervasive. Look at the development of much of railways in Britain, in America. Look at some of the roads that were built up in early European history. They were built by private sector. Individuals did it. Railway, almost entirely the individuals. Tubes, I don't know how many of you have traveled in tubes in London. Many of the tube lines were privately owned. Much of railways was privately owned. So the capacity of the private sector to do these things, infrastructure, is considerable given the facility and capital formation or ability to actually go and raise capital. So what the government needs to do is ensure that capital markets or the money markets are there where the private sector as individuals or groups, as corporates, should be able to raise funds, long-term funds, short-term funds, which can facilitate both small corporates as well as infrastructure development.
No, hang on. I don't like the word government can ensure that the private sector can do it. If you go back to Wall Street in New York, Wall Street was actually a street with a tree where they used to stand and trade. And they did that for 100 plus years before it actually became a market. And the question I ask you is, does the market need government, or can the market operate without the government?
That's a tricky one and a very, very good question. There is a view and a large number of players within the market who believe that the markets can operate without the government. Unfortunately, time has shown that markets tend to have a tendency towards monopolies. They tend to have some large groups form which tend to have huge advantages in scale. And then they tend to actually diminish competition within that market space. And that's where you need an independent... Again, I keep using the word, please, Nadeem, use the word independent body or government.
Fair enough.
So in the absence of independent body, you need a government which will come and say, ensure that there is a level playing field so that the big don't completely dominate and remove the competitive spirit that comes from smaller players.
So basically now, if I summarize what you've fleshed out for me, and that's very important, I think it really clarifies thinking. And I do think that this is something that should be taken up in classrooms and discussed and, widely appreciated. Because in configuring government, we really need the intellectual wherewithal of what a government is doing. And you fleshed it out very well. So we have to begin with life, liberty, and property. But secondly,
exactly,
we have to go on And we have to think, because security also means that I should be able to eat well, live a better life, not that I get a scam and, you know, eat poison and die. Somebody can serve me mercury in milk and I can die. So the government has to somehow provide me that security too, that whatever I buy in the market is good quality stuff, not just somewhere trying to mix tuna and milk and think that I'm going to survive that. And then moving on from there, you're absolutely right, markets also have to have a kind of a, what should I say, some ability to supervise the market, but let the competition happen and supervise the market. Infrastructure can be developed by the market, but again, we require clever supervision, development, market development. For example, when you develop a road, it's kind of conferring a monopoly right on somebody. For example, when you have a power system of Karachi or Lahore or Islamabad, that is kind of conferring a monopoly on somebody. And you've got to make sure that that monopoly does not gouge people. But let's come to the third, another very important role, which we started off and then didn't take up. Security also means that if I fall on hard times and I have nowhere to go, should the government help me? Like I'm destitute, like I've got some severe illness, or like, you know, my family is dying. Does the government have a role? Or this is what Imran would say, Riyasat-e Madina.
Nadeem, I think you've quite deliberately left this till the last, because this is the most contentious role. The other two, one can easily define. Really, you know, one will seem heartless if one says it's not the government's role if someone gets... falls on hard times.
By the way, Victorian England did say that. Remember, Victorian England did say that.
I think if we said such a thing in polite society today, you'll not have too many friends. So one has to be slightly careful in how one frames this. Really, there is a certain element of society where certain minimum, you know, standards, where the government or the society as a whole, let's say the society as a whole, as good neighbors, should take care of fellow human beings. But it really has to be very limited and it very targeted. There is a very great danger that actually if the fundamental belief takes place that the government will take care of me no matter what I do, and if I fall in hard times, so be it, the government will actually cater for me. You actually create perverse incentives for people not to actually struggle and ensure that they don't fall on hard times. One of the reasons you and I have tried to save money through our lives is because we have always thought there could be potentially moments where we might not be earning. So savings might get affected. So I think it's very dangerous for the government to take a role where it says it will provide for anyone who falls into hard times. Yeah. It really has to be such that it's very limited, it's very targeted, and it is in its mandate. And beyond that, the government should not actually intervene in terms of hard times.
Good point. And I think the hardest thing to do is to worry about where individual responsibility ends and social responsibility begins. For example, take healthcare. Is it my responsibility to take care of my health? Or if I know that I have insurance, I say, okay, I'll just watch TV, get fat, and not worry about this because I know I'll be looked after.
So modern socialist and sort of, for want of a better word, liberal thinking, almost sort of thinks that it's my responsibility that, Nadeem, that you have got fat, or don't say this literally, but I mean metaphorically, another person has got fat, and I should take care of his health problems. I actually resent that. I think if someone is smoking two packets of cigarette, I really shouldn't be responsible for taking care of for his lung condition. There has to be a much greater degree of individual responsibility, which I must say it's not happening. Even in America, there's a huge resistance now to sharing of data on individuals and their habits.
And this gets even shakier, David, in education. For example, should you guarantee that all kids should go to school or should you not? There, I think it gets murkier, does it not?
There it becomes really difficult, because one of the things, I think it's a question of agency.
Mm-hmm.
Let's assume, and this is arbitrarily, we can say this, under the age of 10, most people, kids, don't have agency.
Right.
Given that they don't have agency, we should then, someone has to take responsibility for them. Mm-hmm. If they were bad, they were unlucky enough to be born in a poor household, they should not be the reason that should not be the reason why they can't maximize their potential. There's also a greater societal advantage. If you assume resources are equally, or intelligence is equally divided in society, or innovative ability is equally distributed in society, if we don't take care of the poorer kids, we might be missing out on huge opportunities as well for the society as a whole.
Okay, lastly, another important subject that I think people gloss over. Javed, we are getting older, right? The finiteness is staring us in the face. So one thing occurs, one thing is very clear. My generation is kind of going, and yeah, to a certain extent, we are also consuming more than we should and leaving less for our kids, especially if you look at the climate change or whatever. That's because of our generation's consumption, and we are actually screwing our children. The question that I want to raise is that, does the government have a responsibility for intergenerational transfers, A, just like you got transfers to the poor, but the second thing is also for having a longer view of society, and I'll tell you what I mean by it. Think about it. It was the Spanish or the Portuguese government that funded Christopher Columbus's expedition to the
America.
Yeah, it was a research exhibition sort of thing, if you so to speak.
Yeah.
It was this U.S. that funded the moon landing expedition. And again, the payoffs of these things are huge. So should the government be involved in long-term thinking and developing research and... Because most of the research that has been developed around the world is government-funded. So what do you think is the role there?
I think actually if there is a role for the government, it's a thinking government. In the modern day and age, it is that long-term perspective where the government can actually make a huge difference. What we need is small but a thinking government. And a government which can take 20, 30-year view, which by and large corporates and individuals do not take. And that's why it is fundamentally important for governments to take that long-term view. And if you take even a bigger picture than simply an individual state, United Nations, these multilateral agencies, there we need, given what the time limits we now face in terms of climate change, there we really need governments to act in concert rather than simply as individuals. So yes, having started off by saying, the less government we have, the better. There are now some very big issues where the governments and government bodies like multilateral bodies like United Nations, they have to play an increasingly important role in our lives.
Right. So, think about it. I think it's very interesting. I mean, you've been able to flesh out a number of things, and I think I share your views. Fully the point, but so we have a government that looks after life, liberty, and property, ensures that everybody has the opportunity to maximize their potential. So you want to become the greatest violin player in the world, you should be able to. I want to do ballet, I should be able to. So and so wants to be the biggest Nobel Prize winning scientist or writer, he should be able to do it. So fine, all that will happen if we are sitting secure in our house and capable of working, and I've got workspaces. So that's a huge task for the government. Then comes the task for the government on welfare provision, or first of all, market development, or market regulation, or standard setting. Then we get into welfare provision, which again, you pointed out, many tricky propositions. Then we get into long-term thinking. I want you to put all this together and tell me, what kind of a government do we need? And do we have that kind of government anywhere? How can we aspire to that kind of government?
Okay. you know, to put it very, in a, you might think, a facile manner, but basically what we want is an incredibly efficient, small government which is thinking long term. And given democracies, that it's that's not an easy proposition. If you want the perfect example for this, and it, it's questionable how democratic it is, would be Singapore. You know, it's incredibly, relatively small government, but incredibly gifted individuals in that government. The smartest people go to government service in Singapore, yet have 20, 30 year vision in what they want to do. In Pakistan, do we have it? We have to be candid. No, not yet. We should aspire to that. If anything, we have probably a government that involves it in, itself in too many affairs. It because of that, its limited resources gets diluted. Where it can actually make a difference, it probably doesn't make a difference. So it really needs to chalk, the government needs to chalk out where it can make a difference immediately and where it can make a difference in the long run. So you need this constant, and I, you know, it seems like a facile thing to say, but a thinking government, an intelligent government. How do we facilitate an intelligent government?
That's the I think that's the operative word, but... And Javed, you could go on this for a long time, but let me just raise two things with you and get your reaction. One is that somebody said that the whole of academia is footnotes to Plato. And what you said just now sounds so much like the philosopher kings in Plato's
book. I'm actually quite anti-Plato. I'm much more Socratic.
So go ahead. Tell me, why would you... So you're arguing for philosopher kings and you're saying no.
The Platonic model is a very dangerous one. It has led to a lot of disasters across the world. I think the rise of communism, even some of the fascistic states, have been largely due to sort of Platonic thinking that a certain group of people can think better and do better. No, please, let's be very clear. It's not a certain group of people can do better and think better. The people as a whole can always do better than a few number of people.
Okay.
The wisdom of the crowds, one should never underestimate it.
So you think what the wisdom of the crowds is better than experts?
Numerous studies have shown
okay.
that.
Okay.
Fair yes, enough. You need expertise. You need expertise. You need what the crowd needs is full dissemination of information. If the crowd had all the information that the experts have or equal distribution, which is an ideal condition, which doesn't happen, by and large, the crowds will arrive at equally wise decisions as experts would.
So another point that you make here, which is very interesting, is that governments must be transparent. And I think one other point that probably we need to emphasize a lot is the role of information. Markets are made by information. You yourself have worked in markets, right? Policy is made by information.
Essentially, the development...
Go ahead.
The development of so-called the Enlightened Movement into capitalism, social wealth, it has almost about the dissemination of information and... has been made available to the people at large. And as there's been greater and greater information dissemination, the role of the government in some ways has been not curtailed, but definitely been checked in how much coercion they can apply.
Great. But let me also raise this as we sort of toward the end. We saw, for example, and I'm always intrigued by it, tell me how you react to it, that the conquest of India by the British, or the formation of their empire, I should say, or even others, it was really the ability of the East India Company to marshal some of the best talent, to be able to be creative in their adventure of colonizing. So in a sense, they used talent to colonize. So and I just want your reaction to that, and bring you back to the kind of government that you want to configure.
You know, I mean, on the whole, we have to accept that East India Company and its intervention in the subcontinent wasn't a positive one, because in the end, it was much more extractive. But how it happened, one has to also acknowledge that it was essentially basically a takeover of a company was decrepit and insolvent and basically going into more and more difficulties. So a more dynamic force comes along, it inevitably has a greater chance of taking over. This right. happens in the corporate world, it right. happens in the animal world, right. it happens anywhere. Now, this seems a brutal thing to say, but that's the reality. We essentially had reached a stage in the Indian history right. where our own vitality and dynamism was at a low ebb and declining. Mm. And you had a much more dynamic, vigorous, and in some ways nasty group of people Great. Who could come and exploit that situation.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So and now it was ripe to be exploited.
Mm-hmm. So now the key question that comes around where we will end the program, Javed, how do we make this government? Imran Khan has come in. You know him well. You admire him. I admire him. I think he is a key. Not the key, I think he's probably one of the last hopes that we've got to make the change. But even he doesn't know how to configure it. So to help him think through, if he ever listens to this, how can he configure the kind of government that you want? How can he make a better government for Pakistan? Because I think you will also agree, and the book Why Nations Fail shows this, that without a thinking and a good government, you can't grow. So how can Imran Khan do it? Or anybody do it?
I think, for a start, I think almost per force, some of the that are happening in our financial markets and our tax system, per force, I don't think it is because of our own volition, in some ways are good. We are having to focus much more on how we can be more effective in tax collection. We are actually more dependent, less we have run out of foreign borrowing, so we need to focus much more on how we can increase our exportable surpluses. So many of the crisis situation things are actually good for us. We have a currency which has depreciation, which is exactly what we needed. I mean, there's a lot of people hue and cry about why is the rupee depreciated. That's what the market forces required. It was an inevitability. So some of the things that have happened are simply because there was a certain necessity which has happened. Now, beyond that, I think Imran Khan would do very well by, I think, for start picking up your book. But beyond that, it really to focus on how do we make this a small government which has as limited an influence on the daily lives of people, yet is effective where it does have an does intervene. So if it is intervening in insurance of health, it should be effective, but it should not be such that it is universal and it's promising motherhood and apple pie to everyone. It has to be limited, and in that limited sense, it can make a real difference in the government. So if it's education, those 25 million kids out of school, it is an imperative that Imran Khan focuses on. So,
But Javed, there is a problem here. Tell me, we have had my very example that puzzled me all the time, that we have had circular debt and energy sector crisis for the last 12 years, and you have often pointed out the flaws in the IPP system and how, you know, we've got it's almost like a one-way bet that people are placing, right? They win, they keep winning, and the government people keep losing. Now, this has been going on for 12 years. How can we unravel this? I mean, will this happen on its own? Or does it have to happen the NAB way, where NAB is just blundering around, not doing anything?
No, that is too hard. It's too big a hammer, and it's not effective. You need surgical work.
Exactly.
You need much more market mechanism.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You need. I would have the best ways to actually address the IPP problem. We can't really renegotiate the tariffs unless there's been clear violation of rules, but that would be difficult to prove. What would be more interesting is to get international investors to come and buy this phenomenal return. That is it. That will actually provide us some degree of capital cushion that we require. So rather than, now that we have done the sin, Let's accept it and make the best of it.
But the key there is, we need somebody to do the detailed work to make it happen. And the example that I think about is that the 2008 global crisis happened, as you and I both know, and I think both of us have studied it very well. If you look at it, when the 2008 crisis happened, the world was kind of, the dramas of that are on celluloid now, you can see them on YouTube. The world was stuck with, oh, what happened? And, they reacted quickly. But they also went through, and it's still going, if you look at the Jackson Hole proceedings, every time it's discussed again and again. They went through a very long period of study, and then they came up with Dodd-Frank, which is still not the best. But within Dodd-Frank, one of the most important components was that they would set up various research units. One very important unit, the FSA, has been set up here in the Treasury. The point I'm building up to is that the most important part of the government has to be researching the market. Regulation is the most complex thing in the world. And yet we put in any old bureaucrat or banker into regulation without realizing where you go to SECP or you go to the Federal Reserve, there is tons and tons of paper on regulation. Regulation is a very arcane subject. So how do we do that unless we create our own research capacity?
You know, one of the things that is missing in Pakistan is there's very limited domestic think tanks and people focusing on issues like you've raised. We need much more. And to a certain extent, we need, if at all, and this seems perverse, that having criticized and the suggested role of the government should be minimal, that is something where governments can actually play a role. And even in America, some of the think tanks, even if you think about Rand Corporation, was heavily funded by the defense establishment. So you can have different kinds of think tanks and almost deliberately create them to have countervailing influences. And that's something which we do need. And there we should pick the best minds, not only in Pakistan, but
globally.
Electricity market or the stock market. Or and there we need a multiplicity of views to come in, and then some people, the government, to take from that and see how best they can utilize information. Otherwise, this sort of knee-jerk reaction we have to various issues actually lead to greater disaster.
Absolutely correct. Yeah.
So what we need is really detailed analysis, considered opinions, number of different experts, and also public consultation. I mean, one of the things I grew up in England, and for the simple road, there would be huge number of public consultation because even the public has a number of opinions which experts might not have considered.
No, think about it in England.
And if a decision is 6 months delayed, but you'll have better set of results after 6 months, it's well worth doing. The planning stage is the most important stage in any project.
In England, for example, and we've lost it. We used to have it, but we've lost that. Before they make a policy, there is a white paper that's in circulation for a long period of time.
Yeah.
People comment on it, it's discussed in universities, it's discussed in think tanks. It is then translated into policy, right?
Exactly.
Here, Javed, I've been going around looking at the websites of the ministries. I find no policy papers anywhere. I find no white papers anywhere.
The one or two which we like to take credit.
Obviously, I'm exaggerating, but no.
Nadeem, you're absolutely right. I mean, there are a number of areas where there's been a policy framework decided, where people are going at hundreds of billions actually allocated, and virtually no general debate about the efficacy of the measures that will be taken. Now that without that general debate, criticism. Actually, looking at it in minutiae, you won't get the best bang for the buck. And you many of the problems that will come up, which will inevitably, could have been anticipated through this discursive process.
Absolutely.
And it would have taken only 2 to 3 months. It didn't need 1 year. It doesn't need several years. Right. In England, it happens, they expedite it.
Yeah.
But
absolutely.
The fact of the matter, as much this is where is the wisdom of the crowds again.
Exactly.
To get as many people to put in their views as is possible, because genius, you simply do not know where genius may lie.
Right. Well, Javed, I think this has been a very interesting, illuminating discussion. I hope people use it well. And I think this needs this. I don't know whether you agree with me. I'm sure you do. I feel this should be a very important subject in every economics course. It should be, in fact, one of the first few lectures. And thereafter, it should be in the training academy. It should also be one of the first few lectures. So I think this is a great thing that you've done. Any last thoughts before we close up?
No, Nadeem, what I would like to see is actually someone have another conversation with you, probably not me. Why government is the best thing since sliced bread?
Good point.
Let's have a complete
Let's do that. Area. Absolutely. Let's do that. Absolutely.
And we have to have that.
Yeah.
And then let's have a continual set of debates about both sides of the argument.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, no, we'll do that. We must do that.
And the dialectical process is fundamentally missing in our in our debates.
Right. Absolutely correct. Absolutely correct. Well, thank you. I think right now we might wear out our audience's patience, but next time round we'll take that topic up. Thank you very much for this lovely conversation. I really learned a lot. Thanks.